Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank H1 2025 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. Please go ahead.
Good day. My name is Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe, MD CEO of Fidelity Bank PLC. I am pleased to welcome you to our H1 2025 earnings call. On the call with me today are the following executives and principal officers of our bank: Kevin Ugwuoke, Executive Director, Risk Management; Ken Opara, Executive Director, Lagos and Southwest; Stanley Amuchie, Executive Director, Chief Operations and Information Officer; Pamela Shodipo, Executive Director, South; Abolore Solebo, Executive Director, Corporate Banking; Sofiano Garba, Executive Director, North; Victor Abejegah, Chief Financial Officer; Akintoye Babalola, Treasurer; Adetunji Mustafa, Divisional Head, Strategy; and Samuel Obioha, Head, Investor Operations. We have uploaded the investor relations presentation on our website for your review. In this session, I'll provide a high-level overview of the macroeconomic environment and speak to the facts behind the figures. Nigeria's domestic business environment showed strong signs of improvement in 2025. The government's contractionary policies delivered greater macroeconomic stability. The key developments during this period include: on inflation, the rate declined from 34.8% in December 2024 to 16.05% in October 2025, maintaining a steady downward trend since April 2025. Analysts forecast further moderation in the coming months. On GDP growth, Nigeria recorded a growth rate of 4.3% in Q2 2025, an increase of 21.6% compared to 3.48% in the same quarter of 2024. With respect to the external reserves and exchange rates, as of November 2025, foreign reserves stood at $46.7 billion, while the exchange rate appreciated to 1,454 naira per US dollar, compared to 1,649 naira in the corresponding period last year. On oil production, an average daily crude oil production rose to 1.58 million barrels per day in September 2025, reflecting a 19% increase over the same period in 2024. Concerning capital importation, in Q1 2025, capital importation reached $5.6 billion, representing a 67.12% increase compared to the same period in 2024. On financial governance, another milestone was Nigeria's removal from the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, gray list, which restored investor confidence and underscored progress in financial governance and regulatory compliance. Finally, on the back of these reforms introduced by the current government, the S&P Global and other rating agencies changed Nigeria's outlook from stable to positive. The rate change is expected to increase foreign inflow, lower borrowing costs, and help debt sustainability. Therefore, our prognosis for Nigeria's economy is positive in the coming months, and we expect the monetary authorities to drive an expansionary policy. Hence, we expect further rate reductions in the coming months. As a bank, Our strategic imperatives in the current financial year are to optimize the balance sheet by expanding the earning base, enhancing the net interest margin, increasing non-interest revenue, reducing our cost to serve, and keeping the cost-to-income ratio, that CIR, within acceptable thresholds. Despite the end of CBN forbearance regime, our financial results highlighted the resilience and adaptability of our business model. Permit me to speak specifically to the financial numbers now. The increase in our NIM from 12% in December 2024 to 13% in the review period was due to the elevated interest rates regime in H1 2025, which impacted both the yield in earning assets and the cost of funds. The yield on the earning assets increased by 240 bps from 18.1% in FY 2024 to 20.5% in the review period, while the cost of funds increased by 100 bps from 5.2% to 6.2% in the same period. The rise in average funding costs was moderated by our maintaining a high low cost deposit profile. The ratio to low cost funds to our total deposits was 92.9% in H1 2025, up from 92.6% in 2024 full year 2024. Our initiative to drive non-interest revenue over the years is finally beginning to bear fruits. In the review period, we grew our non-interest revenue by 134% from 35.6 billion in H1 2024 to 83.4 billion in the reporting period. The drivers of this growth are digital income, trade income, account maintenance charges, and credit-related fee income. Slide 21 of the investor presentation showed the movement in expenses. Year on year, our OPEX increased by 90.2 billion from 160.2 billion in H1 2024 to 250 billion in the reporting period. A 33% of this increase came from additional provisioning for legal costs. Other cost drivers were staff costs, regulatory charges, and marketing, as well as communication expenses. The rise in staff costs was due to the increased wages and salaries across all CADA. Regulatory costs related to NDIC and AMCON charges, while marketing and communication costs relate to expenses incurred in our ongoing internal expansion efforts. Overall, our cost-income ratio increased to 56.3%, which is in line with our guidance of less than 60%. As a deliberate strategy, we prioritize capital conservation over dividend payment in H1 2025. We are on track to complete the second phase of our capital raise exercise through a private placement. This exercise will add approximately 900 bps to our CAR. We assure our esteemed stakeholders that the full year dividend payment will be in line with our dividend payout policy. Thank you for your support. I will now take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone would like to ask a question, you may press star and then one on a touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. The first question we have is from Nabila Mohammed of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. Please confirm you can hear me.
Yes,
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. So I have a couple of questions. I understand the need to prioritize capital conservation because of the level of the CAR that we saw as at H125 at 15%. But I just want to understand clearly what that 303 billion that was classified as under impaired meant, and how that, you know, affected the retained earnings. Because as at H1, we saw it as a negative 74 billion just based off the financial statements. I need clarity on that figure, if it's related to forbearance or not, or just color around it, basically. That's my first question. Then my second question is with regards to dividend payment, the final dividend payment. So since we didn't see an interim for H125, what should we expect for final dividend, and when should we expect, if not, if we do not expect for full year, when should we now expect dividend payments to resume fully? Those are my two questions for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for understanding our capital conservation strategy. Just to speak specifically to your question, answer your question specifically, the movement of 303 billion from retained earnings to risk regulatory reserve was born out of the bank's exit from the forbearance regime. And to answer your second question, the dividend payout policy of the bank is 25% to 40%, and we will pay full dividend full year along the and we'll continue to abide with our dividend policy of between 25 and 40%.
Okay. So my final question is with regards to the forbearance. So is the bank fully out of the forbearance, and even the breach in SOL, is that sorted out already?
Yes, we have exited forbearance as required by the central bank. We have fully exited forbearance as required by the central bank.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Olumide Sole of Renaissance Capital Africa. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Please confirm if you can hear me.
We can hear you, sir.
Okay. So, starting with, for retained earnings, I see that retained earnings was negative at H1, that's on the balance sheet. Please, can you explain the reason for that? And also, the legal contingency, that over the hang of the legal contingency, what's the update on it? And, has any provisions also been made for the legal contingency in case things go south? That's all.
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much. Like I answered the previous speaker, the movement of 303 billion from our retained earnings to the risk reserve capital regulatory reserve. And that's born out of the exit of the forbearance regime. On your second question, yes, we made adequate provisioning for the legal contingencies.
So,
it was the movement that caused the negative return earnings, and in our Q3, that's been adjusted. Positive.
Okay.
Back to positive in a Q3. Thank you.
Okay. So for the legal contingency, how much have you provided, please?
We have provided 1 billion for the because that is our expectation of our liability in that particular issue.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Habib Oladehinde of WSTC Financial Services.
Hello, good afternoon. This is Kofan Fisayam.
We can hear you, sir, but there is an echo on your line.
Thank you very much. My question is based on the litigation, because from the provision we saw is around 37 billion provision. But according to the last court order, it's 22.5 billion. What can you say about that? How do you arrive at your expectation, please?
The truth of the matter is that this matter has gone back to the Supreme Court, and we are unable to make comments on it because it's sub judice. But our expectation, by our own calculation, which is what gave us the confidence to go back to the Supreme Court, is that our liability is limited to 32 billion plus additional things that would have moved since when the case came out. So I'm not allowed to make further comments on this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
We'll take the next question from Timahin Sesbi Banjo of WSTC Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for sharing with us. And also thank you for having to be a port in this kind of storm. Well done for what you're doing. But very quickly, my question is around recapitalization. Where is Fidelity Bank, and how close is she to having achieved the CBN requirement for Q1 of 2026? Thank you.
Thank you very much. As an international bank, the regulatory capital for us is 500 billion. We are on 305 now as we speak. We are on course for our private placement before the end of the month to raise 259 billion. We have all the approvals that we need for that, and we're very much on course to do that. With 259 billion in, we will be at 565 billion, and we are very confident that we'll be able to achieve that for the end of the year. Because we have, if you remember, our private placement, our public offer was oversubscribed by 234%, and public investor interest is still very much alive, and for obvious reasons, because the investors that we got in at the public offer have made jumbo profits. So everybody wants to be part of our private placement. So we are very confident. Our book build for now has exceeded what we have, what we need, but we're very confident that we'll close out all of this before the end of the year. And this will add back about 900 bits to our CAR. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And can you also speak to your FX savings? Because you mentioned 40% of the balance sheet is foreign denominated, and given the current climate, the Naira seems to be appreciating against the dollar. So how does that weigh on your holdings, and what does that look like how did that affect half year, and how does that also look like in Q2? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We are aware of the impact of the FX gain, so I will get the CFO to speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And the FX gain recorded was born out of the FX tradings that we did during the period, and that gave us these figures you are seeing. Because of the availability of the FX during the period, we took advantage of it and we brought in so much about it. So the FX transaction that took place complemented the FX translation gain made in the balance sheet on the NOP. So a combination of those two income lines give us what we have on the FX gains. of 34.5 billion. Thank you.
The next question we have is from Stephen Chima of Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Right, good afternoon. So on your forbearance, I'd like to get a sense of what the exposure was. I mean, like, the size of the exposure, really. Also, what sectors were impacted the most. We also noticed you have your results. You guys had a windfall tax. Should we be expecting further windfall taxes in Q3 and Q4? And I would really appreciate if you could speak a little around Fidelity Bank UK's financial performance and expectation into 2026 as well. Thank you.
Okay, let me start from the last question. UK, Fidelity Bank UK, over the past 2 years, we have focused on rebuilding the business for sustainable growth and long-term profitability, supported by enhanced risk management practices and very strong corporate governance. You know, the environment where we are with in Europe, England, we have to ensure very strong corporate governance. I am pleased to inform you that these efforts over the years, the last 2 years, has yielded results as Fidelity Bank UK is back on track for profit this year. In the short to medium term, we project that the Fidelity Bank UK will contribute about 2%, 2 to 5% to the group profits. And in the long term, we expect that its contribution will increase to about 10%. We are confident in this outlook, given the robust banking license that we have in UK, which enables the subsidiary to provide a broad suite of services, namely retail, commercial, and also for our corporate clients. So we are confident that they will deliver on the short term, like I said, 2 to 5%, and on the long term, 10%. Thank you. And the second question that you asked is on the windfall taxes booked in Q3 and Q4. They have been amortized over the past 3 years, and the outstanding balance will be completed this year. And there will be no further assessments for windfall taxes. And the question you asked of forbearance, we have exited all forbearances. And our forbearance was about 800 billion. And the sectors that were affected was power and oil and gas. So we have exited all forbearances. Thank you.
The next question we have is from Ngozi Chukwuneke of Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. So I have a few questions. First, don't know if this was mentioned, but want to speak about the delay in the release of the full year results. Was there any reason in particular that resulted in the delay of the H1 results? And then when should we expect to see the 9-month 2025 results? Then, based on the bank's estimates, when do you believe that retained earnings will turn positive? I believe this is going to be also supportive for dividend payments going forward. And then on the private placement, I wanted to know if you, by your estimates, you think that the capital verification process and all of those will be concluded in the current year, or if that will be concluded in 2026, so that we can get a sense of when the inflows will be expected on the bank's book. And then moving on to our expectations for 2026, given that if you look at the mix of the bank's earning, is more or less tilted towards interest income, how do you gauge Citibank's performance for 2026, given that we're moving into a more dovish interest rate cycle. So that would be awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just to confirm that our retained earnings has turned positive in the third quarter, and the third quarter results will be out within the week. So just to let you know that it's turned positive. And the capital verification exercise, we believe, will not be anywhere as long as the last one. Because if you remember, the last one was a public offer, and there were many, many, many investors. A private placement has a much shorter investors, anywhere in the neighborhood of 50. So we believe that it will be a very quick exercise. We actually do believe that everything about the verification will be completed before the end of the year. So we expect that we should be able to add on the figures for our full year report. Then the question on the delay and why the 9 months report was delayed, I'll have my CEO, who is the one that liaises with the central bank to discuss it. But you know that the fact that we had to do a lot of stuff around the forbearance and the capital raise, that's all part of what delayed it. So I'll have the CIO speak to it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, it's been a very busy year, busy in the sense that a lot of things happen at the same time. We're one of the few banks that do audit, and audit also takes a bit of time. So if you add the audit, then the process of exit of forbearance and all that, you know, that delayed a little bit. But what do? We try to carry the market along. If you notice, as soon as we saw that there were some levels of delay, We published an information to the market to let the market know. But that's behind us now. We're making good progress. And at the end of the day, just after this call, I think within the week, as my MD mentioned earlier, our 9 months will also be published. So it's just a busy year that we've seen. And we feel that going forward, things will come in faster and other. Thank you very much.
For 2026 performance as we move into a dovish cycle, given that Fidelity Bank's mix of earnings tilts mostly to interest income, how do you intend to manage that?
Yeah, our strategy has been hinged on driving low cost funds. And if you notice from the report for half year, our non-interest income, the fees and commission, has gone up significantly. And we're driving a lot on our digital banking and diversifying our earnings through efforts on export, significant efforts in digital loans and all of that. So the idea is to diversify our portfolio away from interest income alone and ensure that we have a broad-based income. And on that, we're sure that we have a winning streak and we'll continue to be along those lines. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star and then one on a touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. We will pause a moment to see if we have any further questions. It seems that we now have no further questions at this time, and I would like to hand back to Nneka for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, thank you for attending this call. And just to say that over the years, we have built a very resilient and sustainable balance sheet, and we believe that we will be able to deliver the numbers this 2026 based on that. For the rest of 2025 and going to 2026, despite the headwinds, we will continue to prioritize our strong corporate governance practices, and we'll continue to run a very effective risk management structure, as well as try to conserve our capital in the process. We're also very focused on talent and retention, and in all of this, we will promise that we will enhance our shareholders' value, which is our DNA. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.